I'm Kurt. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, Kurt.
And it's great to be here tonight. Thank you very much for asking me to come down. It's always a pleasure. I just want to start off by saying that if you're here this evening, you don't have to drink anymore. And I'll say it again. If you're here tonight, you don't have to drink anymore. Someone told me that when I was very young in sobriety, and I'd never heard that before. And for some reason, I held on to that with two hands, and that helped me stay sober for in early sobriety. People had said, you don't have to drink so much. And people have told me, you know, you've got a drinking problem. No one ever told me that I didn't have to drink anymore. You know, like I said, I'm an alcoholic. I have a disease of alcoholism. I believe it's a threefold disease. It's physical, mental, and spiritual. When I start drinking, I have the physical compulsion to continue drinking. I also have a physical craving for alcohol that normal people don't exhibit. Like my parents can have a cocktail or a beer or a glass of wine, and then they can go on and have a good evening. When I have a beer or a cocktail or a glass of wine, I want a case, I want a bottle, or I want a bottle. You know, it's like, I don't want just anything. Once I start drinking, I want the next one. You know, I want the next drink, and I want it stronger, you know. Also, the mental part, you know, the mental obsession for alcohol. Very early on, I started planning my day around drinking, and I didn't realize that I had an obsession, but I was always thinking about drinking. Even when I was drinking, I was thinking about drinking. I was thinking about where I was going to get the next one, you know. And when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about how I can get out of whatever I'm in so I can go drink, you know. And it's one of those things where, again, my parents, who are normal people, or I shouldn't say normal people, they're non-alcoholic people, don't plan their day around drinking, you know, that's not done. They don't even think about it. And this, of course, led to a spiritual loss of values, you know, the spiritual aspect for me. Take God, and you don't have to include him in the spiritual thing, you know, for me. I had values growing up, you know. I had values and ethics that I had before I started drinking that I didn't have anymore when I stopped. You know, and that's the values I'm talking about. That's the spiritual, the spirit, the inside part of me was dying as a consequence of my drinking. What happened for me is that these things worked in concert. They worked together. Alcoholism is I respect it. It is a very powerful disease where once I pick up a drink, I continue through a physical compulsion to continue drinking. Then if I stop, I have this mental obsession that leads me back to that next drink, and the cycle just starts over and over again. And all the meanwhile, what's going on is I'm like walking up to my chalkboard of values and erasing them off one at a time, you know. So all of a sudden, you know, I pick up a drink, and for me the first one was lying. I didn't lie. I had nothing to lie about. That was one of my big, like, epiphanies in early sobriety is if I'm not taking bad actions, I don't have to lie about it. So my problems with lying, like for me, stemmed from taking bad actions that I didn't want to face up to. I didn't want the consequences, and that's why I lied. So like lying's off the board, all of a sudden, you know, I'm stealing. So, oh, that's not, you know, that's not important to not steal. But the problem was is that as an alcoholic, it's not that I stopped caring about other people, and it's not like I stopped having like these values in the back of my brain. I just stopped acting on them. It's not that I didn't care about people and places and things. It's that I cared about drinking more than anything. And what that generated for me was a lot of guilt and shame and remorse, which are great reasons to drink, you know. And so it's kind of like, I mean, you have like this circular pattern, the circular disease of alcohol, and you throw in these things of I feel worthless, and I feel like my life isn't going anywhere, and I feel like such a disappointment to people. Well, of course, I'm going to continue drinking, because drinking shut that up. Whatever that was, it shut it up, you know. Of course, the problem is I'd wake up the next morning and all over again. So that for me is this disease of alcoholism that I have, and I didn't get that until I got sober. You know, I didn't understand until I got sober. Very quickly, you know, I come from a non-alcoholic immediate household. My parents are awesome. I love them. They're great. I didn't always love them growing up, but they did the best they could, and they weren't alcoholics, and I didn't really understand how good I had it until I came in AA and heard about other people's families. I was like, oh my God. You know, like, I had it real easy. You know, my dad always showed up to my games. That's the kind of dad he was. My dad expected big things from me. Like, B pluses were not acceptable. A's were acceptable. And A minus, well, you know, you're going to screw up once in a while. And that was the kind of household I came from. And I performed. I'm a performer. That's what I do. You know, I did very well in high school. I didn't drink all that much. I maybe drank twice in high school. I did really well. I'm a smart guy. I graduated second in my class, you know. I got into MIT early. These are all like my, you know, this is where I came from. I'm from New Hampshire, not from around here. And I, you know, went to public high school. I had friends. We hung out. Had a good childhood. So, you know, when I first came in, you know, I heard a lot of people come from these horrendous, like, backgrounds, and it's like, well, no wonder why you drank, you know. It's like, geez, you know, you didn't have a chance. And for me, I'm the other side of the coin, right? Absolutely no reason to become an alcoholic. You know, like, life was good. Life was promising. But what happened is I picked up a drink, and like that, I just started drinking, and I loved it. And I loved drinking more than anything else. And I said to myself, I want to do this as much and as often as I possibly can. I really felt like I finally understood. You know, I come from a high school where it's kind of frowned upon, and you look at these guys who are getting arrested and drinking and driving, and you're just kind of like, what's going on with them? Why are they being so stupid? You know, and then I picked up a drink and I realized, maybe I was the one being stupid, you know. Now I get it. And that was it's funny. It's my first resentment, too, by the way. I'm never getting invited, you know. Motive and opportunity is what an alcoholic needs to start drinking. And I finally got it. My parents went up to the lake for the summer. And they left me and my brother Brian and my 21-year-old cousin Stephen in Bedford. And I proceeded to become a drunk. I drank every day. I drank booze. I drank a lot. I drank alone. I drank till 4 in the morning until I passed out. And I'd show up to work the next day. And I'd have the best stories. Y'all should have been there, you know. This is great. You guys missed out, you know. And I became known as the alcoholic intern. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever. You know, right from the get-go, people were like, Kurt, maybe you should take a day off from drinking. And I didn't understand why you'd ever want to take a day off from this, you know. That summer was great, you know. I got laid for the first time, and it was like, big things are happening, you know. And going off to college, and getting wasted every night. And I went off to school, and I joined a fraternity. I joined the crew team, that's the rowing, you know, and I was like All-American Joe and feeling great. And then what happened is I started getting hungover. and that got in the way of a lot of things. My first day of college started with me waking up in my bunk at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had missed my classes for the day. And that was pretty exemplary of what college is going to be like for Kurt. The night before, I had my first blackout. I was at an alumni's home, and I had two drinks, and they were like this big, you know, and they were like half vodka. And I remember making it back to Mass Ave, and then I remember throwing up in the bathroom for 5 minutes, and then I woke up in my bunk, and apparently I'd been throwing up for 5 hours in the downstairs main bathroom of my fraternity, and people were like, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into? Who is this kid? You know, like, he was such a nice guy, and now, you know, is throwing up for 5 hours. He misses classes. And so, like, I had people right from the start saying that maybe I had a problem. And I would tell them, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm too young to be an alcoholic, you know. You guys just don't drink enough. You need to get off my case. And I instantly started hanging out with people who drank like I did, you know, because I don't want to hear crap. I don't want to hear it. I just want to drink. And I, you know, as my first sponsor would say, I defended my right to drink. It was my right to drink. Even though I was illegally drinking, you know, it was still my right to drink, you know. Fast forward, I failed out. You know, surprise, surprise, I'm a non-functional alcoholic. When you don't go to class, it's kind of hard to do the homework, and then it's even harder to take the tests. And I remember showing up to test high or drunk and just being like, oh, I totally ate that, you know, and having no idea how I just bombed that test. I was pass fail the first year, so I got away with a lot of crap. And I also got introduced to other things that we don't necessarily talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, for me, that was a lot of fun, and those did cause a lot of problems in my life. They were a lot of fun, too. And but my bottom line is, with 20 bucks in my pocket and nothing else, I went to the Packy. I went down to Libby's Liquor Store, you know, in Central Square, and I bought myself a handle of rum. Because that was my primary need. That was what I needed. And then food, maybe second. That was a great... I had $20 at one point, you know, when I was poor at the end. And I, like, bought liquor and got all the way home and realized I have nothing to eat for the rest of the week. And being like, it'll take care of itself, you know, pour myself a drink. And that's kind of, you know... I drank my way out of college the first time. My parents were not too pleased with that. But I was depressed, and that's what I got out on. Medical withdrawal due to depression. I did try to kill myself because life was not going very well. I was a kid, like I said, I'm an achiever. I perform. That's what I do. And I stopped. I just stopped. I was failing classes. I couldn't show up. I couldn't do the work, and I couldn't stop drinking. I didn't want to stop drinking, but I couldn't stop drinking, and I didn't want to look into that. So I went to go see a whole slew of psychiatric professionals, and God bless them. They helped me out a lot with the depression, but the underlying cause of my depression was my alcoholism and some other things, too. For me, you know, what I did was I took some time off. I became a waiter at Who Knows in Faneuil Hall and met all the wrong people and lied to all the right people who didn't understand about alcoholism. And after a year, I got back into school to quickly fail out again. You know, and I remember I had to go to an AA meeting to get back into school. I was 19, and I went to a meeting with all these old guys talking about crashing cars and jail time and beating their wives and, you know, losing their kids. And I just remember thinking, like, thank God AA is here for these people. They really need it. I don't know why I'm here. I've never done any of those things, you know, let alone, I'm 19. I didn't have time to do anything, like losing houses. And, like, I'm 19. Why was I going to lose a house, you know? And I just totally identified out, and but some seeds were planted. And I remember leaving a final my last semester, for real semester, because I had a lot of fake semesters, really good at living a lie. And I remember walking out of my fluid mechanics final thinking that, you know, wow, what have I done? You know, the night before I was all set for this final, and I was all studied up, and my friend was done. He said, hey, you want a glass of 95-point wine, and you don't say no to 95-point wine. It's like out of 100. That's really good. And so we polished that bottle off. Then he brought out the Johnny Walker Black, and I'm like, I don't even drink whiskey, but, you know, hey, it's, you know, it's Black Label, you know? So... Well, we polished that off, too, and then I continued drinking until 4 in the morning for a 9 a.m. final. So I showed up drunk, and I remember leaving. I threw up all over the street in front of all my classmates who were also leaving. And I remember walking, doing the walk home of shame, being like, maybe those 80 people were right. And this was May of 2001, and I got sober in January 2002, January 17th. And what I said was, when this all catches up to me, I'm going to go into a rehab. And eventually it did. It didn't happen until the semester. I was enrolled for a semester and never showed up. And no one knew. And I thought I was, like, so smart. Like, Kurt's definition of manageability, getting away with things, you know. And I was getting away with it. I was getting away with playing college boy and, like, just drinking all the time and really just spiraling into, like, crap. And, you know, what happened is I went home for Christmas, and worst Christmas ever for me. Because at this point I could last 3 days without a drink before I started, like, shaking a little or getting antsy, as I would call it. And we always do Christmas at my house. I was the first one to leave. I had people drive, like, 4 hours to show up to my house for Christmas. I was the first one to leave. 2:30, 3 o'clock. Bye, see ya. Nice seeing ya. Going on a ski trip up to my friend Nikki's ski, you know, like, place, and she had a beer and a joint waiting for me in the car, and I was like, oh, God bless you, you know, like, you are the best friend ever. And I proceeded to drink their, like, polished up, like, a good portion of their liquor cabinet, unfortunately. But anyway, yeah, my dad finally got the letter from the college saying, you know, hey, your son's failed again. He didn't even need to open it, because he knows what the letter is, because he knew. For 2 years I'd been lying and fooling everyone but him. And he sat me down at a kitchen table, and everyone else was gone, and he looked at me and he said, you want to live your life like this? This is your business. You're over 18. I was 21 at the time. You're an adult. You want to live like this? That's fine. It's your business. You'll not do it on my dime. You'll be welcome at our house Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day. Don't expect anything except for some food, and do not stay in over. We can't take it anymore. We can't take it anymore. I'm going to skip over all the theatrics that led up to this conversation, but needless to say, there were some theatrics that I pulled, and that, you know, when your mother cries, you're like, yeah, that's what mothers do. When your father cries, that's like, in public, oh my God, it's horrible. Oh, I couldn't wait to drink after that escapade. But anyway, and I looked at him and I said, you're right, I've been lying for 2 years. And I knew this was coming, so I put in some calls for my HMO to get myself into a rehab. I had no intention of ever getting sober. I eventually went to a rehab in Portsmouth Pavilion in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And, yeah. That's, I had no intentions of ever getting sober. Day three, I woke up in a lockdown psych ward in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. My first response was people like, oh my God, this is for real. I'm really in a lockdown psych ward in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And, you know, I was shaking a lot, and I called the nurse over. This is a big part of my story. You've all heard it before. These people over here have. And I'm shaking, and I call her over. Nurse, what's going on? And she goes, well, when alcoholics stop drinking, they go through withdrawals. One of the symptoms is shaking. And I was like, is that what this is? And she's like, yeah. And that's the first time I thought to myself, I may be in trouble. This may be way outside of my, like, I have been underestimating this. I always thought that if I really wanted to stop, not like this pretend wanting to stop, you know, for other people, but if I really wanted to stop, I could. And then the first time I was thinking, maybe I can't. Leading up to this, I really was thinking, I mean, my state of mind coming, sobering up was, I am worthless, I am broken, I am unfixable, and I need to die. And I tried to drink a lot to make that happen. And I'd wake up angry every morning that I was still alive, you know, and I'd curse the God I didn't believe in for having me wake up again to do this crap again, because I knew I was going to. And So that was one of those like big moments for me when I realized that maybe this is a big thing. Maybe I need some help. Maybe I'm really one of those alcoholics they're talking about. And some guy from AA came up and told me his story and told me they're having a meeting that night. And they let me down. I got to smoke outside, which is really nice after 3 days of smoking in a glass box. And and I heard the message, and I wasn't like sold right at first, but I was like, okay. This is a place where people go to sober up. Maybe this wasn't as bad as I thought it was, you know, because I said I've done the AA thing and it didn't work for me. I went to like one or two meetings. I've done the AA thing, you know. And they all seemed really nice. And plus, I did like a detox, rehab, outpatient. They all said the same thing, go to AA, get home group, get a sponsor, go to AA, we can't help you, go to AA, what are you going to do, you're going to go to AA, you know, and the other thing that scared the crap out of me was I was the only person there for the first time. I was the only person there, not the youngest person there, but I was the only person there for the first time, and that scared me. I met one guy in rehab, he said it was 55. I'm like, first of all, how do you even keep track at 55? That was my question to him. I'm like, why do you keep doing this? Because I'm like, my early sobriety was pretty bad. It was night of terrors. I would wake up drenched in sweat, sweat through that thing in the between the mattress and the sheet that people put on. Like, my head where my feet are, where my feet should be, you know, I'd actually taken things off the bed. Like, I was hungover for a month, even though I hadn't been drinking, and I'm like, that hardly seems fair. You know, I was irritable. I shook for a long, like, my parents were a little concerned. Like, I was shaking for a while. And, you know, and I'm like, you go through this 55 times? And he would tell me that he never really worked the steps. He would get up to step 4 and then stop. And he would never get honest with someone. And so I was just putting all these things in the back of my mind. All these people who had been in there, they'd stopped going to meetings, didn't work with the sponsors. So I'm like, I'm going to do and give this a shot, you know. And my first home group was Living, Loving, Sharing, the 12 Steps of AA in Manchester, New Hampshire. Met at Saturday nights at 8 o'clock from 8 to 9:30. So where I met my first sponsor, Bobby T. He totally saved my life. You know, I met my AA safety net, my group of people besides my sponsor who, like, I can call when I need them and I can trust them and talk to them about stuff when my sponsor's unavailable. It was great, and it totally changed my life, you know. I never thought I'd be able to put together more than a week. You know, I did 5 days on my own with weed, so I'm like, a week is a pretty long time, you know, on the outside. And so what happened was, you know, I got the sponsor, and he, you know, sat me down, and it was like, he doesn't have rules, I do. You will work a program, or you will find another sponsor. He's like, you will go to a meeting a day. You've got nothing else going on. You will go to a meeting a day, you know. You will talk to me on a weekly basis, you know. And it's kind of like, and he's the one who took me through the steps the first time. He took me through how to live life again because I, you know, steps are great, but, you know, it's kind of like, how do I moved back home with my parents who didn't trust me because I had earned their distrust for 2 years of lying and stealing from them, and I had no right to be back home, and yet that was not my attitude. My attitude was, what is wrong with them? Why won't they leave me alone? Why don't they believe me? I'm actually doing it this time, you know. It's kind of like very one-sided, one perspective, you know, on life. And he's the one who said, maybe there are other perspectives on life, you know. This is a disease of perception, and my perception was always, I'm right, you're wrong, I get, you give, not fair. If something didn't go right, it was not fair. It was not my fault, and it was not fair. And moving back into a family that I really had lost touch with, you know, I only drank 3.5 years, but I was MIA for 3.5 years. I was the son who never called. I caused a lot of turmoil in my household, and I just moved back in. And it was awkward. It was really awkward. I mean, it was just, like, horribly awkward. He also taught me how to do meetings. like, and that was a whole, like, AA etiquette type of stuff. And he also took me through traditions and concepts. And anyway, that's always nice. But yeah, so I got sober, and I was told to do six things, this AA six-pack of stop drinking, go to meetings, get a home group, get active in that home group, get a sponsor, work the steps. Like I said, I haven't had a drink since January 17, 2002. I go to a meeting a day. I average a meeting a day still. I haven't always averaged a meeting a day. Those are bad times in sobriety. My home group is the Common Solution Meeting. We meet Thursdays at 7:30. We're always there at 7, though, and we are having a fun fourth-year anniversary party on November 6th, 2008, because we're taping. I don't want people to show up the wrong time. anyway, I think I'm pretty funny. And we're having fried chicken at 6:30. So come on down, and they'll have a speaker at 7:30. It's a good time. I'm the AA grapevine rep, so what I do is I order the grapevine and I bring it to the meeting. And put it on the table, and service job well done. No, I do, you know, I do what needs to be done, you know, and I try to do my part. You know, my sponsor is Tom A. In Charlottesville, and right now I'm revisiting my amends, and that's always fun. Maybe we'll talk about that a little later. So it's, you know, the same things that I was told to do when I first got sober, I'm still doing today, because that's what keeps me sober. I was told if I do what I did yesterday and a little bit more, a little bit extra today, then I'll be A-OK fine. You know, I was really scared of being struck drunk for my first year, and I was also scared of getting hit by a drunk driver on my way home from an AA meeting. That was like my biggest fear. I really thought that's what I deserved. I thought that'd be my higher powers. He'd have a good laugh at my expense, you know, and leave me all like crippled and stuff, you know, and haha, that's what you get from me, you know. And so that was those were my conceptions of a higher power and what I thought of myself when I first got sober. What happened was by working the steps with the sponsor and by going to regular meetings, I got to meet people. And they showed me how to love myself until I could learn how to love myself. I didn't understand relationships. You know, relationships. You know, I came here to get sober. What the, you know, you read these steps and it's like, what are you talking about? I just want to stop drinking. You know, what's this God stuff? And what are these, like, other people crap? You know, like, what does that have to do with me not drinking? And unfortunately for me, it had everything to do with me not drinking. My main problem was other people, and I don't know how to deal with them. You know, I don't know. I get scared, and what happens is I take bad actions, and I tend to want to drink again. And I want to do it alone. You know, this idea of a higher power, I want to do it alone. I don't want help. You know, so me and my sponsor spent a long time on step one. We went through the book, the big book, step book, and we used the dictionary, not because, like, I needed to get all intellectual, but because he needed to put me in my place. Because I really thought I knew the meaning of words, and my meaning's always tailored me, like, manageable. I get away with it. If I get away with it or I win, I managed well. And that's not the definition of manageability, you know. Powerless, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't know what that, you know. Eventually, I feel like, I don't know what that means. They tell me, like, you don't have any power. Well, what does that mean? It's like, well, you can't control it. Oh. And he kept things real simple. I came in here, I did not want to hear about God. Was not ready for that yet. And he gave me the soft sell, which was great. You know, step one, powerless over alcohol. I'll just do a quick, like, so I got sober in home in Bedford, New Hampshire, and I spent a year and a half, and I went through the 12 steps, took me a year and a half. Right around that time, I moved to Burlington, Vermont. Did school there for a while. I was there for the past 5 years, and I moved here in May. That first move didn't go as smoothly as this one. Because, again, like a lot of things in AA, when I sobered up, I realized that I hadn't done a lot sober. I've done a lot drunk, but I've never done things sober. These adult things, like moving. I moved drunk. That was great, you know. Moving sober was weird. I actually cried my first night in Burlington because I was like, I went to a meeting and I met some drunks and I came home and I cried because I'm like, I am out of my element. You know, in that year and a half, you know, my sponsor was the alternate delegate, Area 43, state of New Hampshire, you know, and he introduced me to all of his friends, and everyone knew him, and I was kind of like the poster child, because there are no other young people in my area, so I was like, it was like great, I got a lot of attention, people kind of knew me, and I moved to Burlington, and no one knew me, and no one cared, and it was like, aw, poor Kurt, you know, And I was scared, and I was doing the college thing again for real, like full time. Not at the school at UVM, not at MIT. Now it was like a big ego blow. They didn't want me back. can't understand why. So it's just one of those things where I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he said he's busy. He's too many sponsees at the moment. But he grabbed one of his sponsees and said, use this guy instead. Nothing wrong with that. But the problem was is that I didn't click with him. I didn't want him. I didn't ask him. I wanted the other guy. I clicked with him, you know. For me, like, having a sponsor is, you know, a sponsor is only as good as the sponsee who uses him. You know, and the best, you know, I boiled down to one thing about a sponsor. Am I going to listen to this guy? Do I respect this guy enough to listen to him? Because if I don't, I need a new sponsor. And that's my responsibility. My first sponsor, you know, he that was his big thing. He's like, you are responsible for your sobriety. The first thing he told me was, if this doesn't work out, you ought to find yourself a new sponsor. Right away. Like, being sponsorless is stupid. You know, and he's like, but if we don't work out, it's nothing personal, but I need to be responsible for my sobriety. You know, and if it's not working out with him, I got to find someone else who I will listen to. You know, and what happened was I didn't, this guy was great and he taught me a lot of good stuff, but I knew he didn't click. We didn't have that connection. And what happened was I slowly started sponsoring myself. And what's that old adage, if you sponsor yourself, you have an asshole for a sponsor. And a real stupid sponsee who will listen to you. And I just co-signed my own BS for like, it was a slow, gradual process in my basement apartment of me just making my own decisions on things, never running anything by anyone. And what ended up happening is I forgot to turn in a homework problem set. Not a big deal, who cares, you know, but I blew that out of proportion to what is the teacher going to think, what, and I just like, all of a sudden, you know, I had no recovery program going on, and what happened is that spiraled into me afraid to leave my basement apartment and go to school. I did finish that term, and I did okay, but it carried over, and eventually what happened was I did exactly what I did and when I was drunk, which is, I'm a hider. God bless you all for running with all that energy. I'm a hider. I'm going to lock the doors, draw the shades, and that's it. No one home, you know. And I did everything that got me into this program, again, sober. I stopped calling home. I stopped going to school. Didn't actually tell them. I just stopped going. You know, I stopped hanging out with people, and I wouldn't leave my apartment. I remember one night I was on my hardwood floor. It was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm crying again. You know, and I had two choices. You know, I believe in a progressive recovery because I also believe in a regressive recovery. And I'd regress right back to step one. You know, I've been through the steps, but I was right back to step one, where either I am going to pick up the phone and call my sponsor, and I'm going to listen to what he says. Because I got a new sponsor in the meantime, but I never really called him because I figured I'm doing a good job, you know. I don't need this other guy, you know. Because my friends were pestering me, like, you don't call this guy, how about this guy? that I did like. So either call up Arthur and listen to him, or go out and drink. And I'd like to tell you that, you know, it's because of who I am and God's special child that I chose to pick up the phone and call my sponsor. That's just baloney. I chose to call my sponsor because between 1 and 2, I'm not going to drink enough. And I know that as an alcoholic. So I figured, you know, that's not really going to do the trick. I may as well call my sponsor. And I did at 1 in the morning. He loves me for that. And like, hey, you decided to call me at 1 in the morning. How about that? And it was a Saturday night or something. So I wasn't too, you know, didn't feel too bad. And what he did was he walked me out of the quicksand. And again, another sponsor saved my life. He gave me step-by-step directions on how to do damage control, which was call my parents right now and give him a call back just to let them know I'm alive. And then you will be calling them again tomorrow, but you know, that was when I called them back. He's like, now you will call them again tomorrow. You'll also let me know how that goes. And also, tomorrow I want you to wake up at 10 o'clock. I want you to walk up to the dean's office. I want you to officially withdraw from school. Explain to her what's going on. Give me a call back when you're done. You know, and that's how he saved my life. You know, there was 2.5 years sober, and I felt like a newcomer. And that's exactly what I was. I had lost that part of my recovery. You know, I cannot say, and that was my example of I can't stay sober on yesterday's sobriety. It's what am I doing today? Today, what am I doing? What actions am I taking today that say I want to stay sober, that say sobriety is the most important thing in my life? Because I didn't do that. And I quickly ran out, like 9 months of working with the sponsor, you know, air quotes on that, just kind of being like, you know, yeah, okay, then the plane crashed into the mountain. You know, it's just kind of like, oh. And I didn't pick up a drink, and that was the only thing I did right. I picked up the phone instead of picking up a drink. And he walked me right into, like, and there are, like, huge ramifications for that, those decisions I made. You know, being out of school, I started working at Starbucks, and that was another, like, crushing blow to my ego, you know, someone like me working at Starbucks. And they have good health benefits, so that was good. And I do like them, you know. But, you know, and what happened was I started working a program again with him. And honest to God, not a year later, everything was back to normal. Like, I started feeling like I should have felt, you know, just kind of like normal again. And that was great. And what I learned from that is I need to talk to a sponsor at least every 2 weeks. If I'm not talking to a sponsor, and I prefer every week, you know, at least touching base, you know. Because if I stop doing that, I'm not really working with a sponsor, at least for me, you know. And for me, going it alone, I've had the spiritual, you know, change or whatever, and I see things differently, and that's all great. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm right. You know, I make the right choices on my own 9 times out of 10. Unfortunately, that 1 time out of 10 are, like, the big things. And I tend to not want to make the right decisions over there. So a sponsor is helpful for that. Anyway, what happened was when I moved here, I did things a little differently. I did the meeting a day, and I gave myself a month to find a home group and a sponsor and to start, you know, working the steps all over from the beginning. And that's what I did. I found, you know, Common Solution, you know, how, you know, what, I talked to some new people, and I'm like, well, how do I find a home group? Like, a home group for me is when I leave that meeting, I'm like, I just went to an AA meeting. You know, I feel pretty good, you know, not like all my problems have been solved, but in here, I think everything's going to be okay. Things are going to work. Whoa. Touching stuff. You know, things are going to be all right. You know, that little sense of calm, you know, that I feel from a meeting. And I also felt welcomed there. And that's how I chose all of my home groups, the ones that worked. The ones that didn't work, I chose out of convenience because it fit in my schedule, or because there was someone there who I was interested in. And those home groups never really worked for me. I stopped going after a while. And a home group for me is if I'm in the state and I'm not at a conference, then I'm there. You know, it's a little bit easier when you're in Vermont because it's much smaller. But, you know, it's the same deal as, you know, I don't care if the Patriots are playing. I don't care if the Red Sox are playing. You know, I'm at my home group. You know, and I'm there a little bit early, and I stay a little bit late, you know. And that's an action I take every week that says I want to stay sober, you know. Sobriety has been really good to me, a lot better than I thought I deserved. I never thought I'd move south of Boston ever in my life, and here I am. And that's kind of a nice surprise. And the funny thing is, I went to a party last night, and I ran into some people. Like, I know their daughter because I met her at the Monday night meeting, and her parents are in recovery from the Stowe, Vermont area, and I've actually gone out to dinner with them because one of my friends in Burlington is being sponsored by the husband, and we all went to dinner, and then I saw her again last night, and we put two and two together. She's like, you look familiar, and I'm like, you look familiar, and we're like, yeah, I must have seen each other at a meeting. But we, you know, actually had dinner in Burlington, Vermont, which is kind of funny. It's a small world, you know. Anyway, that's just a complete side story. It's kind of like, so this party, there are people drinking. And that was one of those things that used to really bother me in early sobriety, you know, going to a party where people were drinking. I hated it. Absolutely hated it. I always felt like I was missing out. I always felt like I should be on that side of the room, you know. And it's funny because last night I didn't feel that. Last night I was like, you know, I was uncomfortable being around people I don't know. But what A's taught me to do is put on a smile and say hi and chit-chat. You know, I've learned how to chit-chat in AA and be sociable, you know. And it's one of those things which is kind of nice to be able to participate in life every once in a while. I have worked the steps, 1, 2, 3 for me, took me a long time because of the whole God thing. Step one, my sponsor always kept it about booze, 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 drinking, 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 you know, and he always brought it back to booze, you know, don't want to make that amends, you want to drink, is that what you're saying? Say you'd rather drink than make this amends? Well, not when you say it like that, you know. You say it like that, it makes it sound bad. And that was my thing, you know. I did become thoroughly convinced that I'm an alcoholic. I can no longer drink in safety. Alcoholism is a progressive disease. I need a progressive recovery for my progressive disease. You know, it's a tortoise in the hare. You know, my disease is the tortoise. It is slow. It is steady. You know, it does get worse. I've never relapsed, but I've seen other people relapse after having some time, and man, they do not look good when they come back in. And I've not heard once, yeah, it was worth it. Or, yeah, it got easier this time. This is way easier than last time I got sober. No one says that. They always tell me it gets harder. Don't go back out that, you know. And it's the relapse happens a long time before, you know. My relapse that never actually came to fruition happened 9 months before I got to that decision point of drink or phone, you know. Step two, my first higher power was my sponsor. He told me not to use him, but I used him anyway. Because he was doing stuff that I couldn't even fathom. He was showing up to work. He had the smile on his face. Things weren't always going his way, but he was always happy. He seemed to be at peace and ease wherever he was, you know. And he is really all about this AA thing. And I wasn't so much at the beginning. So that was kind of nice, kind of fed off that energy. And then my higher power became my home group. And then it became AA. And then it became the principles of the program. And then eventually it became God. But the important thing that he had pointed out is came to believe. We came to believe. It doesn't say belief. Puff. You know. It's came to believe. And it's a progressive thing, you know, and that it happens over time. And time is one of those four-letter words that no one likes to talk about in the program, you know. But it is so important that over time, I developed a relationship with a higher power that I call God right now. And it's not the normal God, you know, I'll be honest. You know, I don't believe everything happens for a reason. I believe everything happens. I don't believe everything happens for a reason. And AA says, that's fine, Kurt. You know, A is like, just believe in something bigger than you. You know, and I'm like, I can do that. You know, my God is way bigger than me. You know, and that's all I need to know. And that me and God are not like pals. That we don't high five at night, you know, and like chum around. He's God and I'm Kurt. And that's something I need to remember, you know. And step three, how did I do step three without believing in God? Quite simple. Rarely have I ever seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. When you've decided you want what we have, then you are ready to take certain steps. And that's what he pointed out. And how it works, when you've decided you want what we have, then you are ready to take certain steps. And some of these we balked. Fourth step. Third step. Fourth step. And he kept it that simple. You know, I remember sitting in his Cadillac, and he said, Kurt, you've been sober for about 9 months now. How's your life going? I go, well, it's a lot better. You know, there are all these, you know, things going wrong. You know, I can still say the same thing today. You know, he goes, you know, do a 180. When you first came into AA and today, which one is better? I go, well, today. You want to keep doing this stuff? Do you think this AA thing is working so far? And I said, yeah, I think it's working so far. He goes, you ready to take the next 9 steps? Because he had been waiting for me to, like, broach the subject of, like, a fourth step. And I was, of course, not. Because who wants to do that? And some of us balked, you know. And what he did was he took me through the fourth step. I did it out of the big book. I had discussions with other people about how to do it and what's the right way to do it. And the one thing that me and everyone can agree on is do it. Do it. That's the most important thing about a fourth step, is doing it. You know, I had to do it. It took me 3 months. I started my fifth step a year and a day sober, which is what you get in New Hampshire for drinking and driving. A year and a day up in Concord State. And my sponsor told me that, and he laughed. He thought that was pretty ironic. you know, and I also remember the night before, when I got my one-year medallion, he's like, your 5 minutes are over, now the real work begins. And he's like, you know, there's that. Things are going good. Everyone's patting me on the back. And he's like, back to work, you know, just another day. And you know, I did the fourth and fifth with him, and what I did, that's where God started coming into the picture for me. I hated God because I blamed God for everything that happened in my life, because I found out real early, God is the best scapegoat. He is not going to show up to, like, be like, nuh-uh, that's not what happened, you know. God's not going to do that. God's just going to be God. And I'm going to go on blaming, and I'm not going to take, you know, and hey, it's all this guy's fault, you know. When in reality, it was all my fault. I play the lead role in my life. I am the one common denominator in all of my resentments. My attitude sucked. My actions sucked. And I didn't even know it. I did not even know it. I thought even in early sobriety, my sponsor would always say, your attitude arrives before you do. It took me a long time to figure out what he meant by that. And then it took me a long time to realize he's talking to me because I had a bad attitude. I thought I was being a pretty good sport, too. He's just like, no, you're not. Not really. A lot of work. You know, more shall be revealed, you know, or keep coming. And, you know, for me, doing the fourth and fifth was like, wow. I got most of my big secrets out before then because, honey, you stay sober for a year with the big secret's still inside. I don't know. I couldn't. So all that, those are like my testing things to test my sponsor, see if he was talking to other people in the program about me. Like, can I really trust this guy? What happened after the fifth step was like these metal chairs, that's where my rear end belongs. It was like, you know, and I still have my fourth step, and every time I think that I'm not an alcoholic, I can just open that back up and see the wreckage I've caused, see the kind of person I become when I pick up a drink, you know. You know, I may not have wanted to be that person, but that's what I became, you know. Six and seven, It became a lot easier because I started believing God by that time. And I'm like, oh yeah, these character defects are horrible. Okay, take them away. Yeah, that's another lifelong process. 8 and 9 amends. You know, for me, those have been the hardest ones to do. Like I said, I'm revisiting some amends. I just sent an envelope with cash in it to someone that I wouldn't pee on them if they were on fire. That's not true. I would pee on them if they were on fire today. But that's the attitude I have about this person in my mind. And it doesn't matter. You know, my sponsor's big thing is I don't care what they did. I listened to that in the fourth step. You got all that out in the fourth step with your resentments. You got to tell me what everyone did to you. And then remember how we turned it right back on you? What was your role in this? Like, welcome to reality. This is now your side of the street. You clean up your side of the street. And that was like a big thing for me to realize that what really kills me about other people is not what they've done to me, it's what I have done to them. That's the stuff that really sticks in my craw. You know, and it's real hard to forgive other people when I somewhere know that I'm at fault. You know, because it makes me feel bad. So I sent this envelope in the letter. It's letter, envelope. Sent it with the cash to this guy. And it's funny because I only think about him when I share about that today. I didn't want to do it. You know, I'm 6 years sober. I still didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do it. My sponsor, Tom, you know, we're sitting at the villa, and he's looking at me, and he's like, well, I don't care. You want to do it. He's laughing. He's like, you know you don't want to do any of these amends. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, you know you're going to do them, right? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, by when? I go, by the end of the year. He goes, sounds reasonable. You know, got this list of amends I need to make by the end of the year. Try to go into next year clean. It's a good, I like to do that. You know, I've got a relationship with my family, which is awesome. I couldn't spend an hour with my father drunk. When I was drinking, I couldn't spend an hour with him unless I got some money out of it. And today, we have a great relationship. I call home every week. I have been for 6 years, 4 years. I lived at home for a while. Wouldn't call them. That's kind of weird. But, you know, aside from my relationship with my higher power, that has been the relationship I've spent the most time on because I was a really bad son. And it's in AA talking to people that I learned how to be a good son. And it's one of those things where it's not even amends anymore. It's just something I want to do. Like, I've learned how to have a relationship with my parents, which is, like, awesome. And they're good people, so I have no reason not to. You know, 10, 11, 12, for me, have just been, again, what am I doing today? Today, today, today. What am I doing today? You know, I'm a big believer that this is an action program. Thoughts and feelings, I don't care. I kind of care, but I don't really. You know, it's what am I doing today? I had never been able to feel my way into right acting, and no one really cares about my intentions. So what actions am I doing today? Am I showing up regularly when I say I am? Or am I flaking out like I used to? I used to get in horrendous fights with my father, and my sponsor would say, well, Kurt, you know, your father doesn't trust you, and I got that whole I earned his distrust. But he goes, but you react in the same way that you used to. So how does your father know any different? You stopped drinking. Good job. You're reacting the same way. He goes, next time you have an argument with your dad, react in a different way. And that was that whole idea of if I change my actions, oh my God, the outcomes change. You know, and for someone who's a little slow like me, that's exactly what I needed to hear. I was at a meeting Friday night. Someone's talking about willingness. Well, at least that's the topic I thought of when I heard what they said. And she talked about standing on the hot pavement and having a sponsor, you know, and the sponsor's a person who just says, get in the shade or get off the pavement. You know, if your feet hurt, they're blistering, get off the pavement. I need to hear that from a sponsor. You know, it's one of those, I sponsor guys, and I can be like, get off the pavement, you know, duh, while I'm standing on the pavement myself. You know, I need the sponsor to also tell me, get off the pavement. Well, stop yelling back. Having an argument, stop yelling back. That stops an argument. Huh. You know, so AA has been really good to me. My life is really good. Like, I'm in grad school, and for someone who failed out a lot, that's pretty neat. You know, and I have a whole host of family and friends that are awesome, and a relationship with God that I never wanted. And that's been pretty good, too. I feel like life is not horrible, and that life's pretty good, and things are going to work out, and I just got to keep doing my actions, you know. So, again, thank you very much for having me come down to speak tonight. And, yeah, again, 6:30 on November 6, 2008, having fried chicken dinner, and then a speaker, Val from Richmond, and you're all welcome to come. It'll be a good time. Thanks.